At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, LeaderShield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best-kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Would you believe that champions weren't measured by rings, but by a crown? That the history books were written on dirt? That the greatest of all time was a horse?
He is moving like a tremendous machine.
Experience the magic at this year's Belmont Stakes as we honor the 50th anniversary of Secretariat's legendary Triple Crown triumph. Join the celebration at Belmont Park on Saturday, June 10th. Tickets on sale now at BelmontStakes.com.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Beck. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
We're back, and I guess right as we were taking the break anyway, we had the... I looked up and I saw that the line had dropped. Sometimes I don't see that. But we were taking a break as it happened. We're about 10 minutes from Andy Serling joining us. Graham Motion is going to join us as well at the bottom of the hour.
SpongeBob.
Exactly, SpongeBob. I should get, we'll see how long, Graham, maybe we'll save Popo for tomorrow. got a couple of minutes, actually, rather than I was toying with bringing in another visit, but with Andy coming at 11, and we got tons to discuss with him, and actually he'll probably want to sound off a little bit as well on this topic, because I'm pretty sure it's still at the... Casey, is the mutual interest is still at the Best Of, right? It's on the Best Of page. I haven't gone to look lately, but you know, that topic... And I termed the I pitched it to John Parada at the time. It was early in 2006, if I'm not mistaken, or maybe 2007. I said, "How about if we got leading, you know, six leading industry voices, and had each of them basically sound off and." Massage a topic that you know they found compelling and vexing and of as I called it mutual interests, and Steve Crist, Andy Beyer, Maury Wolf, Jerry Brown, Andy Serling, and Ted Mudge, half hour each, and it was last time we listened I think we ran it a couple. I think we ran it not that long ago, while we were on one of our breaks, a holiday break, and
contributed to the and to what the cause
and what they were each concerned about, what their interest was, and you know a lot of these discussions have not changed for the game in forever. I mean, I wrote a piece on my original version of Derby Trail when it was a club on Yahoo, where I put like five headlines, and they all looked like they were issues that the industry was facing, except that they were from the 30s.
When you go back and read some of the older books,
exactly,
it's just a repeat.
Obviously, there's different forms, but you know, aging population concerns industry executives. This was in the 30s.
Yeah, small fields. Racing in the 40s.
It's unbelievable.
You know, we go over the topics. A lot of the topics we've just discussed, be it run-ups or the betting or anything like that, and. And we just keep talking. And we just keep going around in circles and talking about it. And, you know, we ask people, always ask, how come this stuff doesn't get done? How do you get this stuff done? And it all comes down to, in some form, like I always preach, it's communication. There's got to be a way, and there is a way, to, you know, have to sit down with locally, regionally, nationally, you know, racetrack operators and have a couple of these guys, a couple of these experts, explain the situation to a group. And, you know, you have to, there's always someone that's going to step forward and be able to, you know, take the arrow and is willing to live through the change. And Pat brings up a good point. Whatever, any of the stuff that happens, oh my gosh, that's not the way we've ever done it. We've been doing it like this for 100 years. You know, those excuses, they can't be the reason for not trying some of this stuff. And too many people, I mean, I preach in this game right now. There's too many people in the game whose job it is to keep their job. In other words, they're too afraid to reach out and try something, and oh my gosh, it doesn't work. And we try something else. You know, the status quo, the wake up, you know, wake up, pull a George Costanza, hide under the desk, and hope the sun comes up tomorrow. But it's going to take a few people there, and there are some more engaging leaders out there that I think are willing to take some chances. But the more this stuff bubbles to the top, used to be talked about in the back rooms, you know, and now we got some experts out here talking about this, and I think people are listening, and a little groundswell by the bettors in some fashion maybe can, you know, I'm not talking boycotts or any of that stuff. I'm not into that, but having some of the executives listen to the rank and file and say, here's what we like. And I think it's, we're slowly going down that road.
Well, and there's been, you know, there has been progress. I mean, you talk about the beating of the drum that when it came to takeout, and that was something that ultimately did get recognized by the majority of track execs, and you know, the calls for attention to it. I mean, in some cases, things were stymied. I mean, Barry Schwartz, when he was running NYRA, he was whittling down the whips, and his goal was to get to 14%. And the New York State Racing and Wagering Board stymied it and forced the numbers back up, back up toward 17. Barry was Barry's involved in every aspect of the game, a player and a breeder and an owner, etc. The advent, the era of the 15% and 12% multi-race takeouts. I mean, multi-race wagers technically don't need as heavy a slashing of takeout as whips do. I mean, everyone should be betting Hawthorne right now. I mean, what the Careys did and Jim Miller, what they're doing with the effort to have the best whip takeout in the industry. Canterbury, the Canterbury tried an experiment that was so noble, and one thing that got amplified by that experiment was, if you don't have a comprehensive industry-wide effort to lower takeout across the board, no individual trying to be a trailblazer is going to necessarily benefit from their initiative, because the money that stayed in people's pockets because of the reduced takeout at Canterbury, it didn't necessarily translate as money being plowed back into their handle. That money could have been used elsewhere, but it was for the common good. It's a big, big organism, but it needs, you know, it needs widespread application.
It does, and you know, you mentioned whips with the pick fives event. I think the proliferation of the gimmick wagering in itself has been a problem. I mean,
you're not alone with that.
You know, I mean, we got rolling pick threes. We got doubles. We got
three.
I think it's too much. I mean, because effectively the take on a lot of these bets is 100%. They're not winning. Nobody's winning and cashing. And you know, years ago we had win play show. Not going. I'm going, too far back. But to explain, we had win play show, and in California we had the fifth, the seventh, and the ninth were $5 exactas. I mean, you said, oh my God, I got to save up for that.
That discussion has found purchase. The higher increment bets.
We've been pushing that for years.
That came out of the player conferences, Breeders' Cup, Paul Matisse, and the group in particular.
Yes, every bet doesn't have to be for everybody, and that's what we've dummied everything down to 50 cents, and that's fine too, but. What happened to, a couple of pick threes with the larger pools? Now these pick threes at some of the tracks, the pools, it's not worth playing. So we have too many of those. We got rolling doubles. What happened to the first two and the last two for a double? We got two pick fives, three pick fives, four pick fives. I'm guilty of it myself when I get to the big days. I don't want to bet a horse to win. I want to play pick fours and pick fives. And the return is not. You have to invest a lot of money for that. And I don't think enough people are winning.
And
hey, I love that horse.
You're
he
not
paid $30. You get home. Hey, how'd you do? I had the horse. Would you win? I lost.
Well, and I'm going to bring Andy Serling in now for this discussion. And Andy's name has been invoked repeatedly this morning, first with Andy Beyer, and then later with Pat Cummings, as we talked about the piece in the Financial Times last week. And I mentioned how Andy had really been the first person to reference the idea of effective takeout. And Andy hammers with us, and we're also massaging around, the whole organism, the interrelatedness of the pools and the whole marketplace. I think we lost him, we'll get him back.
Well, I wanted to ask him too, and I had this in my notes too, about just that the pricing at Saratoga, just getting in. They did that. What's that going to do?
Well, that today, it's terrific. Today is a tremendous, as it happens, the opportunity today to get your season ticket at for Saratoga, and it even includes. It's a crazy.
What does that mean? What do you get when you get a season ticket to Saratoga?
It's the season pass. It's
You can $60 for, you can get in every day instead of paying the $10 fee.
And it includes the Travers admission. Yeah.
Can you do it online?
Yeah. I am. Hold on.
I'm the ticket. I'm the ticket man. I got to get a couple of those. That's a pretty good deal.
Let me actually, because I'm having trouble with Andy's phone. Let me see if let me get Pat, because I'm glad that this came up yesterday. In fact, I was talking to Andy yesterday, and which reminded me that there was going to be today was the 4th, and the tickets were going on sale. The pass.
But I was earlier. They had made an announcement that there's the clubhouse and the general admission are gone. It's just one. You can go anywhere. I was just wondering what the effect of that do you think would be. I don't know. I like the separation of states, so to speak, but they must have had something thinking when they decided to make everything the clubhouse, basically.
Let me see if I can't. I just tried to grab. And it should be. I'm going to assume it's on the.
I never heard of that. I know at Monmouth we used to do, I think the first week of every month we would give away passes for that next month. And you could get a little hard card and come back for the month, which anything to get the people back on track. And Saratoga doesn't obviously have that much problem with getting people on track. But they should try something like that at the tracks downstate. Maybe get some more people there.
Well, Aqueduct is...
Walk right in. Sit right down.
Hold on here. I had the email, and I should. I do not have a printer with me this week, so I'm a little. I'm a little underutilized.
You know, going on around us, they have all these orientations here for the meet, which is fantastic. I was talking to the gal up front. Being the short meets that it is here, they get a lot of local people that just come in and work for the 3 weeks or 4 weeks, however long it is here, so they got to remind them that we're rather at a racetrack and horses are everywhere and where not to go and where to go, and this is still one of the races. I've only been here for Breeders' Cup. I've never been here for a normal day of racing here at Keeneland because I'm always working, and that week that we spent here for the Breeders' Cup really got to know this place, walking around and the backside and backwards and forwards. It's horse heaven here. It's fantastic. It's the closest thing to Saratoga wise as far as for the horse. You feel like this is where they belong.
Here's the specifics. Actually, here's the details. And they actually go on sale tomorrow, not today. That's the 5th. I've lost track of days. Season pass for 2023. $75 through the end of May, and that provides fans admission for Travers and all the days of the season. So basically, it averages $2 $2 a day, less than $2, because we got a 40-day meet and $75. The Travers Day general admission is $25, so it's a ridiculous, it's just a ridiculous value. Then actually the pass gets a little bit more expensive June 1st, and then July 1st goes up to $85, then $95. This is nuts not to take advantage of this. Single day admission will be $7 this summer, 24 hours if you buy 24 hours in advance, $10 day of.
If I was a hotel up there, I'd go out and buy 10 of them, give them to your 10 best customers for their stay.
That's a nice idea, actually.
They could turn them back in, and then the next guy can go.
It's a fabulous Christmas. Early Christmas.
If you're a renter up there, which we are,
it comes with the
deal, take the pass.
That's a hell of a... Look at you.
Huh?
Look at you.
When you leave, you leave the ticket under
Zillow,
the pillow.
Zillow, not Zillow. What's the Vrbo?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, $7 a day, just general admission, $7 a day, times 40.
It's 10.
Well, no, 10 the day of. 10 the day of. 7 if you buy your ticket 20 by on Friday night, if you buy for Saturday, it's $7.
Huh.
If you show up Saturday, it's 10. So 7 times 40, $280, and the season pass is $75.
Yeah, it's kind of cool to carry around a little pass, too.
That's true.
You kind of show
you
your...
Get it, you can get it.
What's that in your wallet? It's season pass.
My season pass.
Yeah.
And I, you know, it, I'm, what does it, a lot of times...
It's not one of these electronic things, is it? Because I'm not doing that. I want the key card.
That's
I
great,
want the pass. I don't want,
actually,
a, I don't want a phone
that's
pass.
That's actually a great question.
It probably is on a phone, so you can't pass it around.
So, all right. I'm just seeing if it's at whatchamacallit.
Did they sell picnic table passes?
Yeah, yeah.
Is that the run? Reserve,
yeah,
that's the run reserve, for the roses there.
You can reserve for the picnic tables, and I mean it's a tremendous deal. $7 a day versus $75.
And, so. If Andy wasn't upstairs, he'd be down
he'd
there
be
with
in
us.
The backyard.
Absolutely.
Andy Serling joins us from NYRA, just telling everybody, Andy, about tomorrow tickets, the season pass going on sale. But of course, bigger fish to fry right now because it's Wood Memorial Day on Saturday. Good morning.
Yeah. Yeah, sorry, there's somebody doing work on the part of the above line, so it's a little loud.
Well, we got people here at Keeneland being orientated, so we're on the same on the same wavelength.
Were they disoriented before?
I think so.
Very.
I think
very.
They were wandering around
Churchill
Versailles, and they they packed them all and brought them over. I love it, Andy. Before we talk, the wood, your thoughts on everything we saw Saturday, particularly the 3-year-olds, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, I think that unfortunately, we're not seeing our breakout performances. You know, I think Angel Empire ran very well. It certainly ran better than I expected, but he was obviously a dominant winner of the Arkansas Derby, but he's the only horse out of that race I think you would consider at all. He made a long sustained run, which is not an easy thing to do in those races. He got a respectable buyer figure of 94, but nothing once again that's going to get anybody too excited. And behind him was just sort of an eyesore of, what, 6 horses hitting the wire together. So, I think we saw a nice performance for the winner. Whether or not it's going to be a performance that makes people want to bet on the Derby, that's something that will be determined, I suppose, later. I thought that the Florida race was disappointing from Forte's standpoint, and that only took a step back from a speed figure standpoint, which I don't think is a great thing to see. You know, he's making only 2 starts before the Derby. He's had he's obviously had a more classical career, starting his career in an early maiden race at Belmont. But I don't really care as much about that. And, obviously you don't want him to peak before the Derby, but the fact that Ira had to ride him the whole way, that's something we've never seen from him before. He's a horse that had always been very professional and seemed to find his position in races more facilely. And also, I don't think he ran as well as the mount. I mean, I'm sure he didn't run as well as the second horse, who broke slowly. Now, that's the second time that the mage has broken slowly, and that's a real concern. There are other concerns about it as well, obviously, but and then he made sort of a wider premature move, and I think Irad wasn't that premature, I say, but a wider move. Irad tucked in and let him make that big move, and then he not just hit the top of the stretch, so he saved a little more ground and sort of allowed him to make that move. I think that was a very important, decisive winning point for the horse and Irad. But I don't know. Mage is obviously very talented. I'm afraid that they're rushing him along, and that's the kind of thing that usually blows up in a horse's face in the Derby. You think of Taba, or even Curlin. Now, obviously, Curlin was facing much better horses, but Curlin was also a much better horse. How he didn't, probably the worst race he ever ran was in the Derby when he finished a distant third. It's just hard to win a race like the Derby with that little bit of conditioning, but obviously he's very good. Listen, I've been a fan of Forte since the start, not the mispronunciation of his name, but his, the actual horse. I just didn't like the race he ran. It's not the race that I would want to see for a horse that's going to be probably the favorite heading into the Derby. So, you know, I think it was one of those weekends where I didn't see a lot to say, wow, I'm getting more excited about these horses for the Derby, and a lot of things were more of a cause for pause. Not to say that any of those horses can't be effective. I just didn't see any overly compelling. And I think this Derby remains wide open.
You know, when you talk about Mage and the demand on him, the horse that I always think of whenever there's going to be a horse running in the Derby on his fourth career start, I think of that nice materiality that Todd had that won the Florida Derby and then was down like in the two hole for the Derby or the three and you know, then ran in the Belmont 5 weeks later and never ran again. And that's the horse that, I mean, he was a talent and would have been better off, you know, maturing on his own time.
I mean, it was a good horse. I think there's a lot of those. I think that's probably a reasonable recent example. There's also the social inclusions of the world. Horses like that. But even Curlin made his fourth start in the Derby, right? He had run well, but it's a very big ask. You know what? I mean, it's not the exact same thing, but I don't think it's completely different from the Japanese horse, right? To try to come over here after shipping all over the world and then come from Dubai later win the Derby. I mean, based on, I think, the performance we've seen on the racetrack, the Japanese horse is the fastest horse coming into this Derby. But I'm not sure it's going to matter because of the preparation and bringing him to this race. So far, it's something that's backfired when it's happened. And people can say there haven't been that many examples. There have been a few with some pretty good horses, you know, and they've really underperformed. Not to say it can't happen. It's not to say this horse can't win. If he were the 16-1 that I saw on some website the Derby day, then he probably wouldn't be a bad bet. But I don't think you're going to get that price. And I think it's just very hard to get the Derby. It's a hard, very, very hard race to win. So to make it even harder is sort of tricky, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's all I got for this weekend.
That's cool. That's fine. Let's look ahead, and feels like we're shaping up nicely for tomorrow's draw, and the way this wood field is coming together.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I'm not that familiar with the horses in it, most of them. So I was sort of waiting until it got drawn to look at it more closely, but. I think they're talking about a 12-horse field, which is great. I don't have any reason to think that Hit Show isn't the horse to beat in there. He was very good winning the Withers in 91 Buyer that day in February. At this point, he has the chance to move forward in the wood and make himself one of the favorites for the Derby. Whether or not that happens, we'll find out on Saturday. But I think that Hit Show is the one horse that I can think of. Well, I mean, we'll talk about California in a minute, but certainly around here, or because I don't, the wood, we already know Tappish Rice. I mean, I'm not his biggest fan, but he's obviously a Derby contender. I'm not sure there's anybody else in the Bluegrass, though. I don't really know. I don't know who's out there as of now, but a horse can step forward and sort of make himself a contender off a big performance. But I think Hit Show, based on what I've seen, is the one to beat. I mean, I suppose the winner of the Gotham, who's running the Bluegrass, even another improved performance would make himself a theoretical possibility. He got a 90 in the Gotham. He ran very well that day, but it was a one-turn mile and a wet track. The one of the reasons I thought it was interesting in the Gotham was to me, it looks like a horse that'll improve with distance, so maybe he takes another step forward, another race, and another furlong. Well, he's going to have to do that. But I think his show in the wood is very much the worst to beat based on what I've seen. But once again, I'll take a look at the field when they draw it tomorrow.
Well, and for those that haven't, don't have access or don't get a chance to read some of the, you know, the probable possibles. Classic Car Wash, Hit Show, Slip Mahoney, Linda Rice, Arctic Arrogance.
I think Arctic Arrogance is very good. Whether or not he's good enough to win this race, mile 8, I don't know. But I do think he's a good horse.
You got Shadow Dragon coming back for Mott. Mr. Swagger, Classic Catch, Croupy, Dreamlike, all three of those for Pletcher. Will Walden with Clear the Air, Safi Joseph showing up with Lord Miles, and then there's a couple of possibles, Paolo Lobo, Transect, and Doug O'Neill, I think, is staying home with I Don't Get It.
I said I'm not familiar with those horses. So
yeah, there's some...
I'll draw the race.
On the Bluegrass front, Raise Kane, Tap It Trice, Blazing Sevens, Verifying, who Cox mentioned yesterday, of course.
Oh, Verifying is back. What did Brad say about him?
He's happy with him, and they're taking the swing.
He ran lousy in the Rebel. Not terrible, but not great.
Yeah.
And we'll see. He had a good race the first time. I would never discount Brad the way his horses run. So he certainly feels like a player in there, a potential player there. Blazing Sevens was atrocious in the Fountain of Youth. I imagine in retrospect, they wish they went to the track, they won the champagne on the slot, but be that as it may, he's still got to show that he can improve. He ran that good race in the slot, but other than that, he's a little bit, I mean, his Beard of Juvenile wasn't terrible, but it left a lot to be desired.
Couple of other names, beyond Verifying's got 14 points, Blazing Sevens has got 16, so really...
The points aren't that relevant at this point. The reality is that, I don't know, it seems like every year the points come down to horses that want to run. Well, so we'll see, you know what I mean?
Yes. There's a couple of outsiders, too. Major Blue from Lucas, Mendelssohn's March from McPeak, and then there's a couple of McPeak. Runs got some Thunder
Major
on there.
Major Blue is running in the wood, in the Blue Race?
Yeah.
You know his last two races are?
His last two?
Yeah, he broke the maiden going a mile. He cut him back to 5.5 furlongs where he won. And now, 2 weeks later, he's running him in the Bluegrass. Okay, then.
He's been very... Lucas,
I believe his last race is on March 23rd.
Well, he's on the probable list that they put out yesterday.
About Wayne, he's half-worth, will travel.
Exactly right. And then, of course, in California, we're going to have a pretty heavyweight confrontation. Practical Move back with Go Rocket Ride and Skinner. Then there's this Japanese horse, Mandarin Hero.
He's a lesser,
yes,
though, right?
Yeah, he comes from the B circuit.
I wonder if they're kind of testing it to see, because, listen, I mean, I understand there's all this furor and uproar about the Japanese horses, and I get it. I do, you know. I don't know that it's quite as impressive as some might think if you start dissecting it. But obviously, they are breeding good horses over there, and certainly feels like a favorite that, with 30 Triple Crown races in the next 10 years, almost excluding this year, but even including it, they'll probably win one of them or more. But I think they have to figure out exactly how they're going to prep for it. You know, I think we've sort of seen these unorthodox ideas of prepping for races are not the ideal way to get through one of the toughest races, if not the toughest race in the world, to win. So, I'm not, I'm a little skeptical. I understand they dominated the Mid-East races, especially this year. Are we really sure they were very good? I mean, the UAE Derby, a Japanese horse, it's pretty much a given that it was about 5 buyer points faster than the World Cup, which speaks well for the UAE Derby winner, but speaks horribly for the Dubai World Cup. And I don't think we saw the strongest of fields in these races. Not knocking the Japanese, they're obviously very good. But I also think people tend to look at results without actually taking them apart as much as they should. And yeah, they did well in the Breeders' Cup, no doubt. They won a crazy, fluky distaff, and the favorite didn't get the best of rides, and so they managed to win the Philly Mare Turf. Their horses ran well, but I think people are getting a little bit ahead of themselves to suggest they're ready to quite take over the world.
Well, they're,
and this isn't a knock on them, but, you know, and it's also very tough to ship here and win these races, especially with an unorthodox plan.
No doubt. I mean, look at Godolphin and Shadwell, and how long they. You know.
Right. Godolphin's concept of using the UA Derby was just moronic, to be honest, and it obviously never worked for them. Some pretty darn good horses, you know.
Yeah.
So listen, they'll adapt, and I'm sure they will. And maybe, you know, with this horse going there is a sort of first step. And I imagine I won't be surprised when, once again, they have real success in these races going forward. But I'd be surprised if it happens with an unorthodox prep routine. You know, saying I want to win it my way is not a plan that's worked in the past. You know, obviously, Arazi was never the horse he was in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. But, you know, running in one prep over in Europe, bringing him here was ridiculous, right? Now, maybe he just never went on from 2 to 3, but still. Very hard race to win.
Very much. That's
very hard when you make it harder.
Hmm. No, well put, well framed. Andy, the rest of the Saturday action, we should let people know. It actually starts on Friday because the Distaff is running, you know, the old Distaff.
Yeah, it's an interesting race.
Yeah.
Because you've got Funny Hal, who's proved dramatically, Rose Veloce, who's the speed. She's got to get 7 furlongs. And you've got Pass the Champagne coming back. But she ran very well in her race at Tampa. I did not love her race last time at Laurel. Not sure what to expect from a horse that I'm sure has been very frustrating for the Weaver Barn, because obviously, I mean, she just got nailed by Malathot, like so many, in the Ashland, and just spent more time on the shelf than running. But she seems like a player, and the Gerrymander is coming back, and I don't have any idea what to do with her. You know, she ran so well in winning the Mother Goose, and she sucked in the Alabama and Cotillion. So I don't know what to think of her. I mean, she looked like a horse that really could have been a player. You know, she'd beaten Nest as a 2-year-old, obviously. She didn't go on the way Nest did, but she looked like it in the Goose that she was, and then she was just brutal. You know, yes, nobody was beating Nest in those races, but it doesn't even matter. She was awful. So I have no idea what to expect from her.
Then Saturday, in addition to the Wood, we certainly, Andy, week to week, are waiting not just for breakthroughs from the boys, but breakthroughs from the girls. And maybe it comes, we got the Gazelle, we got the Ashland, we got the Santa Anita Oaks. Certainly that Punch Bowl, talked to Brad Cox yesterday, and there's people looking forward to her coming back in that spot.
Is she going to be this year's Interstate Daydream, or is she going to win the Ashland?
I don't know.
Because Interstate Daydream came into the Ashland as the co-favorite, I think, along with Nest after that huge race in Oakland. She was sort of decidedly mediocre. You know, she wasn't terrible. She didn't run well in there. I mean, she was second in the Iowa Oaks. She never really panned out. And she had a lousy return in the Arazi recently. I'd get them all confused. Sorry. I don't know what, you know, to do with her as far as, I mean, I think to put the 3-year-old fillies into perspective, in their careers, there's 2-year-olds and 3-year-olds. The two highest figures were run by Money's Gold, a 101 in her debut and a 106 in her last race. The horse with the third highest buyer behind the 101 and the 106 for Money's Gold was Randomized, who broke her maiden in her second start on the first race on Friday at Aqueduct. She hadn't run since she ran third in July with a 62 buyer in Saratoga. And Kaling, who has not come back for Todd Eclipse, and I always thought could have been a good horse if she blew up in the Alcibiades. She got a 92 buyer, a figure that people think could have been higher, not lower, on Friday at Aqueduct. So that's the second best buyer. So that, or second best horse with buyers. That should put this crop together. I mean, Wet Paint improved with an 89 buyer. She's currently considered the favorite for the Oaks, depending on what we see this weekend. 89 buyer. Nice horse. 89 buyer. I don't know. Is the Oaks going to be a full field again? If it is, it'll be very interesting to see how the races bet. We'll see how the races run this weekend. But right now, it is a decidedly mediocre group heading towards that race.
It feels like it. I mean, we'll probably see some fillies in these three races that'll be making, you know, their first start going around the two turns. They'll be stretching from 7 or a mile.
I'm sure that'll work out well.
Well, sometimes
I know, but it's very hard. I mean, it's very hard to be overly enthusiastic about this bunch.
Yeah, I hear you.
I mean, the Colts, they're not much faster. So, you know,
yeah.
I mean, who are the triple-digit buyers in this group? Forte got it in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile.
That's
who
right.
Who are the others?
No, there's...
Are there any out there?
Phil.
Two Phils on a synthetic track.
Yep, two Phils in the synthetic.
On a synthetic track.
That's right.
On a dirt.
That's right. And what's his name? Hard to figure, of Baffert's that had 100. Practical move in the San Felipe.
Yeah, he did. You're right. Yeah. You know, as somebody else said to me this weekend, the performances of Reincarnate at Oaklawn and that horse, the Tim Yakin horse that ran at Gulfstream, don't exactly inspire confidence in the California group.
That's not unfair.
No, but that Rocket Can's performance in Arkansas doesn't draw us a lot of excitement for the horses that run in Florida. But I guess if they're all bad, then anyone can win. But it's, you know, I mean, listen, I'm happy to see a competitive betting race. And the Oaks may be a really fun, competitive, interesting betting race, which is great. But, and the Derby too. But on the other hand, if people are looking for particularly good horses, as of now, we're not seeing them. But it's also early. A lot of these horses are relatively lightly raced. Nest, you know, ran a respectable second in the Oaks with a very good trip, though she had run really well in the Ashland, but then she really improved up in Saratoga, so they can and will improve. But right now, we're not looking at a particularly overwhelming...
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands, the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Friesian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only a low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with...
I'll count down? Yeah, I'll count it down. All right. 3, 2, 1... Very happy to be joined by Jack Wolf, Starlight, of course, and an unusual circumstance that finds him in Australia. And we think of Jack having plenty of far-flung interest. This is about as far-flung, Jack, as it gets. Happy New Year. Congratulations on the big sham result.
Okay. Thank you, Steve. It's always good to be on. It wasn't really the horse I thought was going to win, but I'll take anything.
Well, there's actually several parts that of a conversation that we could have even before we get to the Australia portion of what's going on and why you're down under, literally. The move, Jack, to becoming, you know, part of this group with SF and with Matticat, in this particular, in the winter, actually, in Reincarnate, Bob Masterson's involved and Stone Street, but the base, the last several years, the quote-unquote Avenger group, principally you and SF and Matticat, talk about it, because it feels like a formula that really, that is working.
It's funny. You mentioned the Avengers, and I don't keep up with that stuff, but the guys call me Thor, and I've never even seen the thing, and we were at a function, two or three days ago down here, and I got my picture taken with Thor, so that was my daughter's highlight of the trip anyway. But getting back to what you were referring to, Tom approached me, Tom Ryan, who's basically the managing partner for SF and, working with Starlight and Matticat, and you mentioned Bat Masterson, Stone Street. They're all great people to work with and love the game and all that, but I want to say we started 4 or 5 years ago with the concept of just pooling the money and going out there and trying to buy as many good horses as we can under a given budget. And the first year we had Frankie Brothers and actually Henry Field was up also, and then had Donato, and Corbin Blumberg had just started working with me too, so he's got a good eye for the horses. So anyway we started up, and now it looks like there's a number of outfits copycatting, so I guess we're doing something right. We're being copied, So,
how would you characterize the change in approach and philosophy? How it's evolved for Starlight, and then how you merchandised it to the partners, and how different is the makeup of the group, of your group, than it was 5 years ago or 10 years ago?
Yeah, that's a good question. It all started 22 years ago, I guess, with just Lori and myself going out and started, I think, the first crop we bought. We bought 7 yearlings, and one of the yearlings was Harlan's Holiday, so he took care of a lot of mistakes. But we just started out on our own, and after about 3 or 4 years down the road, we realized the capital risk and the need to probably average paying a little bit more for the horses. So I'd say the first 9 or 10 years, we would go to the yearling sales, the 3 main yearling sales, and through the first three or four years, we were trying to average, I don't know, maybe buying 12 to 14 horses, averaging about 150, and actually it was working for a while, and then following that, and the average price seemed to keep creeping up to where we were probably averaging, I don't know, 300 a horse for 12 to 14 horses. And then we had a couple of dry years there, and then we hooked up with Tom over at SF, and that model will buy at an average of about 500 per horse, and with all the different partners, we'll spend about $12 million. But and as far as Starlight is concerned, it's growing from, like I said, just Lori and me to 12 partners that most of them have been in the thing probably 15 years or so. But it's sort of a snapshot of Starlight through the years and where we are now.
Well, and when you look at the kinds of horses that you found yourself involved in with this approach, I mean, I suppose Audible was the first thing we did
with Tom and SF is we leased the racing rights off of them on Audible, and then the following year we started buying the breeding and racing rights of all the horses, which the first year we did it, we had 3 stallion prospects. It was, sort of crazy, the results that we had that first year. So but this year our 2-year-olds have just turned 3. We've had a couple of real good ones with Todd Pletcher that have either broken their maiden. One of them is actually won a state bat flip. And then we've got, we had 10 or 12 with Bob that have already broken their maiden. And the one that won the Sham the other day, and we've run 2nd and 3rd in 1 or 2 of the other races. So we're off to a great start with this crop.
Well, you also think about authentic, right? Authentic should be included in this. And we've been talking a lot, actually, Jack, about Charlatan going back to the November sale and how well received, and what the interest was in his weanlings, and then also in the mares that he's gotten in foal. There's really been a parade of these horses, most notably the ones that most recently came through the Baffert operation, and then when you look at a chart like Saturday with Reincarnate, Newgate, and National Treasure, finishing 1, 2, 3, it's obviously going to be exciting, and Baffert will, he kind of plays it seat of his pants when it comes to moving them around and the timing. But obviously, you come out of this, with points and with the kind of excitement toward the Derby Trail that you and the partners hope for.
Yeah, and then, the elephant in the room is, Bob's situation as far as what's he going to be able to do or not do. I'd love to see, not that I have any inclination that it'll happen, but I'd love to see, he and Churchill figure a way to get the past issues behind them. But I really have no clue at this point how that's going to work out. It looks like it's going to be probably the same way as it was, you know, last year. But I wish they could work things out. We'll have to wait and see.
Well, in the meantime, this is certainly this horse a good magic out of a Scat Daddy mare, and Woods Edge Farm bred. National Treasure came in as the horse to beat. And, you know, coming out of the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, where he ran a good third behind Forte and Cave Rock, and then Reincarnate, Newgate, we should say, it felt like the horse, if it wasn't going to be National Treasure, it felt like Newgate was the one. At least, you know, I rely on Andy Harrington in terms of the West Coast Workout Report, and he made it feel like Newgate was on the upswing, and he ran a great race, I thought, and it just Reincarnate was not going to let him by, Jack. I mean, that was interesting. He just, in fact, the way that race finished was a lot like the way the Jerome finished, where, you know, where it became pretty clear that Lugan Knight wasn't going to let Linda Rice's horse by.
Yeah, it looked like, you know, it looked like Frankie Dettori was saying something to the other rider, almost like, well, here, I'm getting ready to pass in. Obviously, he never did. But the National Treasure horse, he galloped out nicely. And like we said at the beginning, I mean, all three of those horses are very nice. And then, you know, the next big race, we've got this Carmel Road and Fort Bragg. They've ran second and third in the Los Al Futurity. And then we've got a horse named Jackstown that looks like he might be good. And we got Fort Warren. And then the horses I mentioned with Todd, Bat Flip, and the filly that the girls have got is really a nice filly. I don't know if you remember her, Saratoga Plank. She broke her maiden very impressively.
Great race.
Ran a 90 fire and then had to stop on her.
We're just coming back. Casey, cut us back in if you would. I guess we got disconnected a minute ago. Yeah, we missed a portion of this, Graham. The signal dropped here from here at Keeneland. Graham Motion with us talking about what transpired with Affirmative Lady winning the Gulfstream Oaks. And, you know, tell me about AMO Racing, too, Graham.
Yeah, so Kia, he bought horses and sent them to me about 2 years ago. When he first came over here, he bought several horses at the two-year-old sales, and you know, he's obviously become very busy in England. I mean, he's particularly keen on the two-year-olds. I think he might have won the first two-year-old race in England 2 weeks ago, but he's becoming a big factor in racing, not only in Europe, but this was his second stakes winner. He won the stake the previous weekend at Gulfstream, so you know, I think he really enjoys the racing over here. He spent a lot of time in Miami this winter. I think he enjoys the game over here. He likes the action.
Very nice. I when I tweeted out that note, because Dave Grenick gave everybody Affirmative Lady on the show Friday, and I found his Twitter, you know, the Twitter account of AMO Racing, and so I latched on to them, and this is, you know, this was a filly that was obviously, you know, last year as a two-year-old, 400,000 at OBS April, and one thing I said, we were sitting watching the race at Gulfstream with a number of media members, Graham, and I said, wow, here's another graded stake winner for Arrogate, and you know, the realization of what a loss it was for him to die so prematurely is really pretty acute.
Yeah, and a lot of people say that she resembles him in many ways. I don't remember him enough to know that, but yeah, I do think it's really sad. I think people are very quick to knock him as a stallion, but I think all his horses just need distance. They need a route of ground, and I think he's proven that, and he's going to end up being an influential stallion, which is very sad, really.
Well, and of course, you know, Unbridled Song himself was in search of a top son to, you know, to go on with it, and
sure.
it felt like Arrogate was the answer, and then to have him some. now we got to kind of wait and watch and see if one of these, on the Colts side anyway, if one of those, you know, goes on. There are candidates. It's not like it's, you know, and there'll be a few more yet. Talk about you know, preparing to go to Kentucky with her and what kind of a schedule. And
yeah, so I plan to keep her at Palm Meadows at least for the next couple of weeks. I'm not in a big hurry to move her, give her a chance to get over the race. And probably ship to Keeneland around the 17th. That'll be my last van from Palm Meadows to Kentucky. And then she'll do her next two works, probably at Keeneland. I mean, there's a chance I'll do her last work at Churchill. I haven't really got that far yet.
Well, and what about... how committed is Luis Saez, or is that a wait and see right now?
Yeah, I mean, I joked with Kieran that now I've just got to try and secure my jockey, but obviously it's going to depend what happens with Junior Shining this weekend. I think Todd might have a little more pull than me too.
Well, we'll Kieran will make some decisions, influence the decision. Should note that you actually had a nice weekend even beyond Affirmative Lady, because you won the allowance race with Ambitus. That came on Sunday. You also at Tampa Grand Oak, I think on Wednesday or Thursday. An allowance winner, and you know, you're one of those people. I bring up your name, Graham, when we talk about the people that are frustrated with the condition of the turf course at Gulfstream, and you go to Tampa and aren't bothered by, you know, the smaller purse levels. You'd rather have a horse get, you know, a turf course that, you know, that's a real turf course.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's frustrating. I know the guys at Goldstream have tried to do a good job with it. I know they replaced part of it, and I did think it held up a little better. But by the time we got to March, it's not handled so much racing. And I understand they're going to replace it again, which, you know, will be a huge help. But it is frustrating. You know, we take our horses down there. I do think a factor probably has been it just has been such a dry winter too. I mean, even at Palm Meadows, the turf is in good shape, but it's very dry, very firm.
You know, I have to tell this quick story about Graham and talking about his getting pull. I was lucky enough last year to be invited into Gainesway Farm, and I got to stay at the cottage there, and which was part of the old Green Tree Farm, and it was great, and it just been there forever, and I'm. A bunch of pictures on the wall, and here, you know, I'm looking for, oh, this is going to be great. A bunch of old pictures of, you know, Tom Fool or, you know, 20 grand. I look up, and there's Graham Motion. It's all over the place, which Eddie Shearing was up there, whatever. I called him. I said, you're famous. You're all over here. But it was a classic. But Graham, you're the greatest. We just had we had Michael Blowen on this morning, and I guess one of your old charges, Ring Weekend, is at Old Friends?
Yeah, he landed in a great spot there. You know, we tried to make him into an event horse, but he was quite difficult. Just, he was always, had a bit of personality. He was, I guess, a little unfair, but he could get pretty angry. So, Michael's, it's great that he's ended up there. I believe he's turned out with Nicanor, I want to say, the Lael horse. I think they're pals. But no, he does such a great job, Michael. What place that is. We're so lucky to have him do all that.
Oh, he's great. And it seems like, you know, like you said, he does the great pairings. He was talking about, you know, he knows every horse there and their idiosyncrasies, and I'm sure he, you know, he put him in the right spot.
Yeah, they're like kids to him. It's amazing how well taken care of they are there.
Graham, let me ask you about a couple of runners coming up this week. Actually, the funniest starter that you've got, they mistimed the entry at Aqueduct for Saturday or for Friday. It's too bad that Easter couldn't run on Sunday.
You know, it's the second year in a row he's run on Good Friday.
That's hysterical.
My assistant put that out to me.
That is so funny. Easter comes back and that allowance on Friday in the sixth race. And then on down at Tampa, you've got the two maidens entered, Johnson, the Empire Maker, and Pietrelcina.
Pietrelcina, yeah. I think these guys, you know, I really wanted to run them one more time down there. They're both going to have to improve a lot to be competitive. I think down the road they could be useful, but they're going to have to step up. I do like Easter on Friday. He's been in training up here at Fair Hill, kind of waiting for the Aqueduct Turf to open up. So I'm excited to get him started again.
What about, let's get a couple of horses from recent weeks, and we haven't talked, for instance, Mission of Joy that won the Florida Oaks.
Yeah, so she's going to run most likely Derby week at Churchill. Is it the Edgewood?
The Edgewood, absolutely. The
yeah.
Edgewood, you bet.
I hope to run Spinderella that week in the Distaff.
Excellent.
And I hope to run Sparkle Blue in the race that used to be at Arlington. I get confused with the names of some of these races when they move around. The Modesty, which is the same
grade
week.
The Grade 3, yeah. Excellent. How about English B? Where are you with...
English B, I'm going to run him in the Henry Clark at Laurel.
Oh, very good.
You know, I thought last time, I mean, this horse, he's like one of our barn favorites. He seems like he's been around for a while. He's just a blue-collar, hard-knocking horse. I thought we found out a little bit that maybe he was out of his depth last time. So I considered going to Keeneland with him, but after he ran a little disappointingly last time, I thought we'd redirect him to Laurel. I like the Henry Clark. The turf course will be in good shape.
Nice. And that
he actually breezed with Speaking Scout yesterday before I left. And Speaking Scout will go in the Maker's Mark, is it?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then how about our favorite that we did talk about before Rugula made the debut? When's Rugula run back after that good second?
So she'll run back next weekend at Gulfstream. There's a race going 7.5 on the grass that I think for Floribreds, which, you know, is just too good to pass up on. But she's doing well. Look, the winner was kind of freaky good. I thought Effie ran very well.
She ran very well at a big price. We alerted everybody to Rugula, and I was very pleased that after our discussion, Graham, one of our listeners went to Placid Bakery in Troy and brought bags of the Rugula home, and his wife said it's the best Rugula she's ever had. And
you'll be disappointed that I'm yet to try it.
I will save until you come back to New York. When I see you next, whether it's at Belmont or at Saratoga, we will have a bag of Rugula for the motion.
I was going to say, we can have one at Keeneland, but I'm guessing you probably don't find it around there.
The Rugula around here might be a little tricky to scare up.
And can I ask, what is Rugula?
Rugula is a Jewish Jewishy cookie.
It's Jewishy.
It's a sour, typically a sour cream dough that is then rolled with cinnamon walnut, apricot, raspberry, chocolate, with nuts, without nuts, doesn't matter. It's about the size. It's about the size. It's like an ingot. It's like a about the size of a walnut, a little bit bigger than around the size of a walnut.
Okay.
My grandmother's were, that's about right, walnut sized. But Graham, for some reason, Aaron Wellman did not even, or Gary Barber did not explain to Graham how to pronounce it either. They were mispronouncing her.
No, that was a problem. We did find out what it was, but nobody told me how to pronounce it, and I still have a hard time with it.
Is that an East Coast phenomenon? Because, I mean, I grew up in L.A., and, you know,
there's plenty,
very familiar
there's,
with
there's
the
plenty,
Jewish...
There's plenty of good Rugula on the West Coast. And in fact, at the Victory Bakery, my cousin's bakery in Van Nuys, I guarantee you, because they were using my grandfather or grandmother's bakery recipe. Mm-hmm.
So. Definitely a few good spots to find it around Gulfstream.
That no shortage. Flakowitz, the boys. Although I'll tell you, I was at the boys last week, and I was not as happy with the Rugula as I typically am.
Right outside Del Boca Vista is the Rugula plant.
Graham, well done, affirmative lady. sends everybody home with $19 for every $2 bet, and it sends you home with a grade two season ender.
Well, great to talk to you guys.
Always a pleasure, Graham. We'll see you somewhere down the road. We never
see you.
Know.
I'll right? see you, Keeneland, if you're still
there. Oh, we'll be here. So we'll be Friday, Saturday?
I'll be there on Thursday.
Well, then we'll see you then, too. If I had known that, I would have saved you for a live visit.
And you would have brought some regular.
That's good.
Graham Motion, everybody.
And
thanks, Graham. You can follow Graham on Twitter under Graham Motion. So there you go. We don't have time for that discussion, but I will. I have time to thank you for being around and being here.
Well, it's always a pleasure. It's odd. People say, "Do you plan this stuff?" I said, "No, not at all.
It just happened.
Just happened to be here and back in the same room again." I don't. Don't know if you're making another trip out to California by the time the meet ends mid June.
We're trying. We're trying to fit one in.
We will be in Elmont for the running of the Belmont for sure. So that might be the next rendezvous. We'll get the gang back together and Preakness maybe. Who knows?
Well,
we never know.
I don't know if you want to come to Nashville, but arrangements were made yesterday. Don't no one keep it quiet. Don't tell Sean Clancy. Let me tell Sean. We will be going, and we will be broadcasting a couple of days leading up to Iroquois, Percy Warner in Nashville, the grade one steeplechase, the Iroquois.
I'll have to check
We're
the lineup.
We're finally going.
I'll check the lineup at the Ryman and let you know if I'm
Thank
going to be
you.
There.
Thank you. All right. Well, Tina is coming down Friday night, and she's all excited. She's been wanting to go to Nashville for ages. So she's
When is that?
That is between Derby and Preakness. And so I'm going to stay at Churchill and do the recapping Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then Thursday, Friday at the Iroquois, and then hightail it the 10 hours to Nashville, back to Baltimore, and Preakness week. And I was warned by Dave Joseph, here's an advisory for every media member, it doesn't look like the elevator is repairable. The world's oldest elevator. They say it's one of the oldest elevators in the country. The media elevator at Pimlico. There's only one guy who knows how to fix it, and they can't find him.
Otis left the building.
You better learn your way around the other side. You got to take the escalators and then walk across the roof. Any of you neophytes, follow me. I'm the Magellan of getting upstairs at Pimlico without the elevator. Thanks to Graham Motion and Michael Blowen, Andy Beyer, Pat Cummings, Andy Serling. Good luck with your playing, everybody. Talk to you from Keeneland tomorrow at the races.
At the races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.